Five hosts, four divisions, all battling it out for the Holy Grail of the American Hockey League, the Calder Cup. This is the Holy Grail Podcast. Here are your hosts, Jeremy Paul, Zach Power, Andrew Rinaldi, Corey Swartz, and Dina Weinheimer.
Well, hello and welcome back. This is episode 52 of Field Pass Hockey's American Hockey League podcast, The Holy Grail. This is the episode for February the 2nd. And just like every other week, we are here to give you a recap of the last week in AHL hockey. Now, this coming weekend, I guess Sunday, Monday, so kind of the weekend, but anyway, finally, it's that point. I know a lot of people look forward to it, but it's the AHL All-Star Classic in Laval. Finally, after two delays, the weekend is finally here. So my introductory question for the group here this week, and let me know your opinions in the comments or hit us up on Twitter at the Holy Grail, G-R-A-H-L, with your answer. But guys, I want to know, in the spirit of the upcoming All-Star Classic, who do you feel is the biggest snub?
Andrew Rinaldi here from the Chicago Wolves and Grand Rapids Griffins beats. This is a tough one. I'm going to say it's not really a snub because he hasn't spent a lot of time in the A this year, but I'm going to go with Pyotr Kochetkov. He's recency bias and all that, but the kid's an absolute stud, and that's no matter where he goes, whether it's Carolina or Chicago. I feel like they're missing out on having his personality at the events. I'm always going for PK.
And I'm Corey Swartz. For me, it's kind of an interesting one because, like, it's just the way the structure is, but I feel like Hershey could have had like two or three more guys in there. You could interchange somebody out there. Like, you know, there's only one goaltender, and of course they threw to Joel Hofer. I think Hunter Shepard easily could have stepped up into that role, at least for how he was playing in the month of November and December, while he obviously missed a chunk of time, which I think was ultimately what, you know, caused that decision there, as well as Mike Scarbosa. I mean, here's a guy who basically took, you know, kind of getting snubbed and kind of upped his game almost as a result. He took over the points lead from Mike Vecchione, who's the all-star. I mean, that whole top line would have been really fun to see them if there was space to have all three of them on the same spot there. So, I mean, I'm not complaining.
And I'm Dina Weinheimer. I know Cleveland is not doing well this year, and no offense to David Juracek, who for a rookie, for a defenseman, is having a banner year. I can't help feeling that not including Trayfix Wolanski is a bit of a snub. The guy's, in my mind, a true all-star. He was the fan vote for our Field Pass Hockey AHL All-Star last season. Again, personality, he's the whole package. He should have been in there, in my mind.
Hey, everyone. It's Zach Martin from the Checkers. And for me, I know, like, I know we talk about goalies, and, you know, Corey mentioned it earlier, but I think a goalie that kind of has done really well for his rookie season, and I know it's like on the higher end of the stat sheets and stuff like that, but I think Matt Guzda definitely should get a little bit more spotlight, because, I mean, 17 games played this year, you know, that's splitting it with Jeff Berube, Alex Lyon, you know, he's been flipped up and down with the Panthers a couple times, but 10-4-2. I mean, a 9-11 save percentage as a rookie this season, and I mean, there's a lot to like about this kid, Knoxville, Tennessee native. I mean, he has really put on a show, and he most recently, we'll talk about it here in a little while too, but did hit a career milestone as well. So I know there's a lot of other goalies, but I think there should be a little shine put on Matt Guzda for his rookie season so far.
Yeah, and I'm Zach Power covering the Toronto Marlies here for Field Pass. And for me, it's got to come out of the Pacific Division, and it's got to be Charlie Houdon. on the Colorado Eagles. He's leading the team right now in points. He's got 16 goals, 14 assists, good for 30 points on the season. He's someone that I've watched for a very long time, since his Ice Caps days in St. John's. So I'm quite familiar with him. He's definitely got the caliber for it, and he's my snub for this year.
I love how we all went on beat except for Zach and stayed true to his divisional assignment here. Well, with all that being covered, we are going to cover just a little bit of breaking news. And Andrew has a little bit to share about a suspension.
Yeah, I was in the building on Sunday afternoon and I saw this one happening. You kind of had the feeling as soon as it happened because of prior incidents also involving my beats that, like, yeah, this was going to happen. But the American Hockey League's Player Safety Committee announced on Tuesday that Grand Rapids Griffins forward Dominic Schein has been suspended for 2 games as a consequence of his actions in a game on at Chicago. And for those who thought, any context, I can't really give it to you unless I get my own kind of suspension here, but let's say there was a naughty bird in Allstate Arena on Sunday, and that's cost Shiner a couple of games here. He's going to miss Tuesday's game against Milwaukee and then Friday's game at Texas, and that's a big loss for a Griffins team that's really kind of trying to find its footing down there in the basement. And Shiner's a real heart and soul guy. He took a high stick, didn't like that the camera was on him, and I get your displeasure with it, but you can't really show it like that.
So what you're saying is the bird is not the word?
Bird is not the word. The bird is the word for a sussy.
Yeah, well, there you go then, I guess.
All right, well, that's it for breaking news, and we do have a very... I mean, every time we have a guest, I say they're special. It's a great show. But today we are going to be welcoming in another glass breaker, basically here in the American Hockey League, where we're going to be welcoming Sandra Prusina from the Calgary Wranglers. Now, Sandra, play-by-play voice of the Wranglers and the first full-time female play-by-play announcer in the AHL. So stay tuned a little bit later in the show for that. But until then, we're going to take a look at our AHL Elite Prospect of the Week. Once again, many thanks to our partner, Elite Prospects, the world's leading hockey resource for league, team, and player data. You can check them out over at eliteprospects.com. Now, each week here on the Holy Grail podcast, we award the AHL Elite Prospect of the Week, whether it's for their on-ice play, some type of achievement, or something else that made them stand out. The five of us, we put our brains together and pick one player that, in our mind, was the top week in AHL hockey. And this feels like it's a bit of a Grand Rapids Griffin show, but this week, we're going to be staying within that team and give the honor to defenseman Simon Edvinson. 2 goals, 1 on the power play, 1 assist with a +2, 5 penalty minutes, all capping off a productive week for the rookie out of Onsala, Sweden. On Saturday, Edvinson lit the lamp in the third period, his 2nd goal in a Grand Rapids uniform, but it was his 3rd point in the last 4 games. That goal actually snapping a streak of power play opportunities where the Griffins failed to convert. I believe it was in the high 20s. I forgot to write that number down, but it was pretty lengthy. Ultimately, they would end up losing that game to Milwaukee 4-2, but then on Sunday, he paired up with fellow Swede Elmer Soderblom to either provide a goal or an assist on all 5 tallies by Grand Rapids and a 5-3 victory over the Chicago Wolves. Of course, all data is courtesy of Elite Prospects. Moving right along, we're going to go ahead and take a look at our news recap of the week, and we have a trade to announce.
Yes, so the Vancouver Canucks have acquired Atu Ratu from the Islanders, along with Anthony Beauvillier in a first-round pick for Bo Horvat, which is top 12 protected. Ratu scored 7 goals and 8 assists through 27 games this season with Bridgeport. He's expected to start with Vancouver in the NHL.
I mean, honestly, that trade, I mean, I know the Islanders really wanted to make a move, but they gave up, in my, you know, arguably in many circles, one of, if not the highest prospect in that organization.
Yeah, it's they're shooting for the here and now. You know, they got no time to wait, and I kind of like the move for both organizations, and especially if Horvat comes with an extension for the Islanders, and if not, they still have the deadline. They still have plenty of time to work out a deal otherwise. So I dig it. You know, I want to reach out again to Nicole Sherman if she wants to talk about losing Ratu. We're here for her emotional support.
Yeah, the big loser here has to be Bridgeport. I mean, that's, they lose, you know, they essentially lose something and don't get anything back in return. In addition to the prospect trade, that's, you know, future considerations down the road potentially too. So, you know, it just kind of hurts them a little bit more. Obviously, they have plenty of good scorers down there in Bridgeport. You know, not to say they won't miss him, but, you know, it's a tough situation for them to be in particularly.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you look at how the Atlantic is right now in Bridgeport, I mean, Corey, we're going to talk about it at some point. Like, they're in a dead race right now for fifth place, more so fourth place. I think, like you said, it's just going to make – it could take this logjam or this car crash you keep bringing up as. It could – you could be losing one of those cars pretty soon.
I think with this, you have to look at the bigger picture. And I mean, how long was Ratu really going to stay in the AHL, right? He did put up some pretty decent numbers, and it was only a matter of time before he did end up in with New York. And I mean, when you look at what stage both of these clubs are in, New York's window is really closing, and Bo Horvat may be the door jam. Who knows? But I mean, for the Vancouver Canucks, they're very much sort of in rebuild phase, and they needed to do something. So I thought it was a pretty even trade on both ends. Sure, Bridgeport's not really going to get anything really in return, but unfortunately, they would have lost Ratu at some point anyways.
Well, to sum this trade up, our other AHL editor, she summed it up perfectly. As the good book says, an eye for an eye, a bow for a bow. Now it's time to go down our milestone alerts for the last week in AHL hockey. And boy, we have a lot. But I guess the first one ultimately is bigger than the game, impacts the entire community. But I'll let Corey explain that.
Yeah, this past Sunday was teddy bear toss night for the Hershey Bears, who set another new world record for most bears thrown on the ice. I hope you're sitting down for this number. We're at 67,309. That is nearly 15,000 more teddy bears than they had a year ago. The Bears will donate those teddy bears to over 35 or more local charities, part of the Hershey Bears Cares initiative. The actual game, obviously I'm not thrilled to talk about it. It was the first time in Bear history that there was no goal to throw the teddy bears on. And if you guys want to know how much of a statistical anomaly this is, the Bears have not been shut out at all this season until Sunday. Bridgeport has allowed the most goals against in the entire Atlantic Division. Jakub Skarik had not posted a shutout this season prior to this game on Sunday. So it was just, whatever happened there, you know, I know Todd Nelson said that, you know, he felt everything was just kind of a little bit off that entire day. You know, maybe they got out all their goal scoring against Lehigh Valley the night before and scoring seven. You know, who knows? We'll never know. But it kind of turned into what I called furry fury in Hershey last night, because the fans actually started throwing the teddy bears with 5 seconds left in the game. So it was definitely a salty teddy bear toss, to say the least.
Although I have to say, I was watching the end of that game, and one of the most fun parts about being a fan there at a teddy bear toss is to see the players diving in all the stuffed animals and them working with the volunteers. And I was kind of wondering if that would still happen since it ended on such a sour note. But, you know, you had players coming out, you know, once they kind of got all their pads off, some even before then, and still giving the fans a little bit of a show there. So good on the Bears for kind of keeping the moonlight at the end.
Believe it or not, it was a captain move by Dylan McElrath. A lot of the team left the ice, but he kind of led by example and started jumping in the piles of teddy bears. And a lot of the guys, you know, kind of, I think, maybe felt a little bit better seeing their captain do it after such an odd performance. It was for him, too. I mean, he had a chance to score the teddy bear toss goal at one point. And just the way this game was, there was at least one point where he went to, you know, wind up with some good space and his stick broke right in half. You know, you just couldn't make up some of the stuff that was going on there with, you know, the Bears not scoring a goal. So it's something we'll hopefully never see again. But, you know, now we need not wonder, you know, what happens if nobody scores a goal. It's the question I get all the time for this thing. And now we know is that the fans will take it into their own hands and start throwing the teddy bears. So can you wait 5 seconds? Absolutely. But, you know, we have to remember that this came after they made an announcement to hang on to your teddy bears, regardless of if a goal was scored in the late stages. And, you know, that just put an antsy crowd even more on edge. So it was bound to happen at a certain point. There was no winners inside of the final 5 minutes for sure.
And now we're going to turn to some individual milestones.
Yes, actually, last Wednesday night, Charlotte Checkers goaltender Matt Guzda, who we mentioned earlier, made a 19-save shutout for his first ever pro career shutout against a 4-0 win against the Utica Comets. I do have to say that, like, it's a great game. You'd love to see it. Mac played really well. Right from the start, you could just tell Charlotte was kind of like on a mission to like keep their winning streak going, especially with Utica with those really nice jerseys they were wearing that night. But I guess it was all lights out for them in that one. So, I mean, it was good to see Mac just, you know, get his first pro shutout win, and just a great way to keep Jerry Warren for the Checkers.
I see what you did there.
You know.
You see these things. You can't hide.
No, I mean, it was low-hanging fruit. It was just too easy. It was too easy. I couldn't help myself.
So as part of that onslaught by the twin Swedish Towers on Sunday, kind of lost in that was Austin Zarnik's assist on Simon Edvinson's goal, which was his 300th professional point. That's NHL and AHL including. And then also on Sunday, Jacob Vrana skated in his 100th AHL game, adding a goal and assist to the score sheet to reach the 300-point milestone as a pro. So they've got a couple of guys hitting that 300 marker there.
And then finally, last but not least, also on Saturday, Jean-Sebastien Dee recorded the first hat trick of his AHL career. That was a stat that surprised me. I figured he would have gotten at least one, if not two, by now. But anyway, first one in his career in a 6-3 win over the Abbotsford Canucks, and he's with Tucson now, right?
Yep.
Yeah, that's what I thought. As a Roadrunner, I can't believe he never got one as a Rocket, but there you go.
Yeah, going along with that, we did have a notable retirement this past weekend as one of the most prominent referees in the AHL, Terry Koharski, retired after 40 years in the game. That sound that you're hearing right now is some people that are probably booing at that announcement still. He skated for one final time in Saturday in Springfield. And the reason I say that is, you know, I always hear a lot of conflicting things. So being from Hershey, he got booed relentlessly. You know, he was one of the guys that they would start booing at the announcement of him being the referee for. All the players love him. Heard nothing but good things from players and officials on the ice, but there's a lot of fan bases that, you know, still probably have some hard feelings against the guy. But, you know, congratulations to him on a great career. I believe, if I understand it correctly, and one of you guys may have to correct me on this one, is that skating in Springfield was special to him because I believe he has family that works in the Thunderbirds organization, if I'm not mistaken.
Is he related to Don?
I know his daughter works social media for the T-Birds.
The T-Birds, yeah.
I believe that's true. I think that was the one I was thinking of, but I couldn't think of it. It wasn't coming to me off the top of my head.
We had a massive stick taps to him. I mean, 40-year career. I mean, you love to see it. Just being able to do what you do for so long and just get, you know, high praise from players and coaches and stuff like that. It's just, you couldn't ask for a better send-off for a pillar in the reffing circles of the league.
Yes, massive amounts of congratulations to Terry Koharski and his family. hopefully he can enjoy retirement or whatever he decides to do next.
Yeah, and from singing praise and singing jeers to singing the anthem, I got a question for you guys. What happens when your singer is unable to make it for the national anthem? The Admirals have a solution, and take a look.
No. Yeah, that's not any anthem singer. That's the Admirals equipment manager coming in clutch for the national anthem.
He's got good pipes too. This is what I was thinking. I was like, this is like good. I mean, like, I'm great in the shower. This guy, like, he blows like right out of the water, right? I don't know. I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, for coming in, probably didn't have a chance to really warm up. Who knows? Maybe he doesn't even sing in public, but for him to kind of put any nerves aside and say, listen, I'll do it. Good for him.
So do we call him the E-Bus, the emergency backup singer?
I was wondering to make a joke about that too. It's like, oh, so here's our anthem E-Bugs. Is that yep. Right.
I think his next performance is on top of some roof in London or something.
Yes. So I
don't know. He still got some time to get him to the Super Bowl.
He will forever be the EBAS, Emergency Backup Anthem Singer, and, of course, Equipment Manager. So great job to the Milwaukee Admirals for doing that. We've got a jam-packed show, kind of like usual, so we're going to be moving right on here as we go over, gosh, my favorite segment. You guys know it. Swipe left and swipe right, where my four co-hosts here are going to share their hot takes from around the league. And technically, we are in a new month here. So if you used your super swipe last month and have been itching to try to get a new one in there, it's back. You can use it. I know I didn't use mine. So come on, guys, step it up a little bit. Andrew.
Oh, I'm itching to try and get in the one. I can tell you that much. So I'm going to get into Rockford in a minute, just how much they've been struggling as of recent. We'll get into an actual analysis, but what I'm thinking is right now, this is the curse of old Hammy coming back to haunt them. I think that they're just the Ice Hogs have just been putrid is the way to do it. They didn't even look good against Chicago. If you can't look good against Chicago, then I don't know what you're doing in your season here. And it was just they're just I think they're a cursed team. I think until they get they got to get Hammy some carbs. They got to get them really kind of like look at that. Look how awesome that mascot is. And you're going to they took that. Remember what they took from you. Remember that. And Hammy doesn't forget. Look at that monstrosity right there. Ooh. I could say so many things that aren't PG-13 about what he looks like and what he represents, but I'm going to keep it, you know, calm and it's family friendly here. I'm not looking to follow Dom Shine into the sin bin, but until Rockford brings back the old Hammy and they're stuck with this thing, they're a doomed franchise to me.
I am swiping right on this, Andrew. I completely agree with you. Like, one, they changed, like, the mascot they changed, even the logo changed, too. It's like, I think they double whammied themselves into this, and I completely agree with you. It has been a curse. I mean, in our Chaos League, they're in their own division, conference, however you want to put it. It's just, it's been all bad news for the Rockford Ice Hogs, and I don't see it getting any better for them until they reverse some things or change something around. But the logo, okay, maybe we can get away with that. But Hammy, though, that is a big no for me, dog. Yeah, so he's an easy swipe right. I don't even have to think about it.
How dare you try to get me to use my super swipe on my very first viewing of the month? But all I can say is the hockey gods obviously have spoken, but I will swipe right very close to a super swipe up, but I can't do it this early, you know?
Not the first like episode of the month. That's too soon. It's too soon.
First take of the first episode, way too early.
Yeah, no, we gotta build. We gotta get the anticipation going. You gotta get, you know, the people into it.
So, you know, when you go out to a big dinner and they have this like roasted pig hog thing and they got the apple in it, maybe that's just Rockford just dead right now. Like, maybe that could be the analogy. The pig ate the apple. He slimmed up, and here's where we are today. I'm going to swipe right, but I think that the hog ate the apple, and this is what we have today. Justice for Hammy.
Are you saying he has slimmed down and looks like he does because all the other teams have picked him apart?
You know, the Weight Watchers diet has really worked out to be great this year. It's now the first sponsor of the Rockford Ice Hogs. And you know what? It's great news. I'm just not there. I'm not sold on it, right?
You know, so the apple a day does keep the wins away?
Oh, it sure does, baby.
Well, it's kind of interesting because, like, I'm kind of on, like, a different half of the spectrum here because, like, you know, the Bears mascot went through a slimming process a number of years ago where they, you know, basically said they were taking Coco and whipping him into shape and then, you know, they pretended he was working out all summer and all that sort of stuff to introduce the redesign. I feel like I was too hard on that one back then. This is worse. I mean, like, you know, to me, like, it's not even the slim down that's the problem. It's, like, his face, like, that's just nightmare fuel, like coming straight at you.
Hot dog, not a pig.
Yeah, and it, you know, the smile is terrifying. The, you know, they had, correct me if I'm wrong, it looked like they had sunglasses on him before or something like that. And now it's just those two soulless eyes just staring into you. And it's like, you know, it's something you expect to see like the next, you know, monster in Five Nights at Freddy's or something would be, or something like that. Like it's. You know, that's what you expect to come jumping out at you at 3 a.m.
Why is it back on my screen?
I was about to say, like, what's worse, this or Five Nights at Freddy's? Because what about the Five Nights at Hammy's at this point? Like, ooh.
Five Nights at Hammy's.
His future was so bright, he needed shades. Now he just doesn't need it. This is the way it is.
those soulless, unfeeling eyes.
Here's the thing that, like, the old Hammy looks like he was wearing a helmet. This Hammy looks like he's wearing a bat toupee that's just gone way sideways. Like, it is so
agreed.
Bad.
I I've been so focused on just the face that scares little children away that I didn't even notice the helmet.
Why did they decide to give him shorts all of a sudden?
Oh my gosh, dude. Like, what are we doing here?
I like streaking Hammy with no pants.
Yes. It's okay. I figured out why I kind of like this. Okay. It reminds me of like a Porky Pig type thing. You know, just the shirt, no pants, yep. Mm-hmm. Just like a happy little pudgy pig.
It's
getting worse. I got to take it off the screen.
Thank you.
I don't think there's any positive takeaways from this other than they got cheaper felt for the uniform, I guess.
All I know is I'm ready to move on from this topic. It's going to give me nightmares.
It already has. What are you talking about?
Well, I got one for you guys that's hopefully a little easier on the eyes, I hope. So this is going to be a surprising take, particularly because I own this jersey, but we were talking about how much of an anomaly the Bears, you know, loss on Teddy Bear toss night was. And the other thing that kind of added into me is that they broke out the third jerseys for this game. The cream third alternate jerseys that they've kind of had on and off for a few years.
Oh, no, put them and, back.
Here we go.
And
so what we're looking at right now is pure perfection, okay? This jersey is amazing. It was a throwback that the Bears wore for warm-ups, or maybe it was for an entire game. It was actually for an entire game now that I think about it. To honor the 1980 edition of the Bears on one of their anniversaries a few years ago. And what I'm saying is retire the cream third jerseys. Give me this one as the third jersey for the Bears. I say it probably a lot more than I'm thinking of right off the top of my head, but the Bears have so many legacy jerseys. I mean, they're the oldest team in the league. It's their 85th anniversary. I want to see them dip into the back catalog. Obviously, the cream jersey's based off of their original jerseys from the earliest inception of the Bears. It kind of looks like a, you know, more of a football jersey with the number on the front rather than the logo. But I submit to you all that the Skating Bear logo is classic. It is brilliant. It's beautiful. Bring it back. I want to see it, and I want to see it soon.
I'm a man who loves all things retro. You give me a retro logo, you give me a retro style, and I'm all about it. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love when teams go for a new age alternate or try and bring something kind of fresh to the table. You know, I'm all for that, but I'm a romantic when it comes to ye old time hockey, you know, and that's exactly what this jersey speaks to me. Corey, you're my Hershey expert on all things. When you're telling me that Hershey needs to do this and it's got this retro flair to it, I'm all in. I'm right swiping that guy.
Oh, yeah. It's a right swipe all day. I don't even say to maybe make the logo a little bit bigger or maybe like the Skating Bear a more prominent piece other than without the circle and leaving the Hershey Bear at the bottom. I think then it's like a solid 11 out of 10. But no, this is a 10 out of 10. This is an easy swipe right. I mean, same with Andrew. I love classics, and if you can do it the right way, then it's like, okay, we might need to go with these. So yeah, no, this is an easy swipe right. This is just too perfect. It fits so nicely with old school hockey.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm going to kind of nitpick this just a little bit. Let me preface this by saying total right swipe for me, but if I was going to update it first, I guess I have to ask, is it my monitor or are the stripes and the shoulders a little bit maroon and not chocolate?
They are maroon. It's partially okay. Because that was they were a more maroon color scheme for many years leading up to, you know, they were kind of more just basic maroon, and then, you know, they kind of leaned into it a little bit harder when they moved to the Giant Center to make it a little bit of a lighter shade, and then they went to the darker like chocolate color that their logo is currently and what those kind of cream ones are kind of more geared towards. So it is a little bit more on the maroon side, but you know, it fits a little bit nicely in the arena because it's, you know, very similar to how the seats are colored and how the building is too. So okay. It does fit a little bit in that respect too.
Nice. Yeah, but that makes total sense now. I was wondering why maroon? That makes total sense. I would just kind of piggybacking, not to bring up pigs again, but piggybacking off of Zach, maybe make that circle a little bit thinner because right now it's kind of dominating it, and make the logo just a little bit bigger, really make that bear stand out. And I love the little script bears on the actual Skating Bear's chest. Nice touch.
Yeah, there are different variations of the jersey where there's no circle around it. And, you know, if I had to nitpick this one at all, the only things that I dislike is I don't really love the, you know, three ring kind of color scheme on the sleeves there a little bit more. I'm kind of more of a fan of where it is now, where it's a little bit like cream, you know, there's a little bit more variation to the color scheme on their current jersey. But, you know, as far as this one, I do like the circle around it just a little bit more. So that's kind of my hot take, is that if they made that logo a little bit bigger, I think it'd be perfect overall.
Honestly, I like the stripes on the sleeves. It actually brings a little bit more of a flair and a dynamic to like what me and Andrew were saying, old school hockey, because you'd see a lot of teams rocking the three stripes. So I get what you're saying, Corey, but I don't know. I love the stripes on these sleeves. It brings a little bit more flair to it.
I'll line up for it either way. So, I mean, you know, it's the nittiest of nitpicks for me, honestly.
Right.
I'd give this a swipe right as well. I think that if we can kind of incorporate this, I want to keep it the way it is, though. I don't want to change anything, so I would propose that we retire that one and we make like a reverse retro kind of deal with it, and maybe then we can start pulling apart the circle if we want to, or something like that. Maybe incorporate the chocolate colors a little more. Who knows? Because I bet that was during like the Swiping Bear era. Hey, Corey?
When they brought this one back out, it was after that point. This particular design predates the Swiping Bear, I think, you know, historically. Yeah. Obviously being 1980 is this jersey. So it's kind of from that same era, but, you know, it's definitely, you know, more color scheme oriented towards the Swiping Bear era rather than, you know, the current logo. I would like, if they were to refresh it, like reverse retro like that, I would like to see it brought into the color scheme of right now, where it's a little bit of darker chocolate brown kind of shade.
Let's that, and let's play the game at Hershey Park, please.
Ooh, that's one of my biggest wish list items, but the thing that I've always heard hold that back is there's some portion of the old arena, and I don't know what it is to be able to tell you, but this is just what I've been told, is that there's some part of it that's no longer up to code in the, you know, to the AHL standards, and that's why they haven't been able to go back. But rest assured, people ask that question all the time. I've heard plenty of people, you know, within the organization say that's the one thing we get asked all the time. So, you know, it's not going away anytime soon, that's for sure. People ask for that for eternity, honestly, I think.
So I think the North Division people might not like this take, so I'm expecting a couple swipe lefts on this one. But in terms of making it to the Calder Cup final, no team in the North will make it there. I am stamping it, and the Atlantic team will be making the Calder Cup final. So that I know the Marlies are so far ahead of everyone else in their division, but I mean, have they really played anyone up to their level yet? So I think you're going to see a little bit more of an Atlantic type feel going into the finals this year. So I am ready for my swipe lefts, and I'm ready to be told wrong about how no North team will make a final this year.
See, I need a minute.
One of the big thing that always stands out to me is that, like, a lot of teams that maybe have like a high flying offense but aren't the greatest at stopping the puck, they can struggle in the postseason here. I mean, Utica is great at stopping the puck. Unfortunately, they don't really score a whole lot for me to put a whole lot of faith in them, especially after last season's debacle where they had all the hype going into the playoffs just to get outed in a first round upset. And it really comes down to who, if for me it's either Toronto or Syracuse, and it comes down to who they're matched up against. You know, I think any of those top three teams in the Atlantic are both capable of making a run to the finals and also capable of getting tripped up by a Springfield or a Wilkes-Barre, who a team that can just catch fire and anything can happen in the playoffs. But I'm gonna give confidence in that. I think that ultimately it's gonna be that repetitive competition against other high-end talent teams that they have in the Atlantic are going to prepare these teams more, so that way once it comes to facing the winner of the North, eventually they'll prevail. So I'm going to swipe right on that. Even though I haven't picked a team exactly, yeah. I'm confident enough that it's going to be someone from the Atlantic.
I'd probably have to also swipe right on this, if only because I'm biased, because I cover the Atlantic Division. But, you know, and, you know, I firmly would like to see Hershey be the team to emerge. I'm superstitious enough that I would not super swipe it, because I am, you know, it's one of those things where I swipe right and see if there's another one that I'd super swipe on down the road there, type of thing. You know, in hopes that superstitiously I find a really, you know, hidden gem type of thing. But I do like what Andrew's saying a lot with that, is that, you know, the Atlantic Division, you know, it's kind of a pileup right now, and it's because all these teams are playing each other, right? I think the biggest counterpoint to that is that, you know, you have some of the top dogs like Toronto that, you know, should be able to put up a fight. I mean, they're already doing a pretty good job. Like, let's be real, if the North Division didn't have any contenders, there wouldn't be a Toronto team, right? Like, there wouldn't be a team contending this hard to, you know, they're even giving Hershey a run for their money in terms of, you know, trading that Eastern Conference crown back and forth a little bit there. So there are good teams in there, but I do think the quality of the Atlantic, you know, to me it really just depends on how both teams are looking come the conference final. Really, I think it could be a toss-up more than we think. But I still think the Atlantic Division will come out on top.
I'm ready for the North people to.
Okay. I'm going to swipe left on this only because I'll give you, I'm not going to go too long into this because I know we're running a little bit long. But Toronto has had some competition. They have seen the likes of, I was just looking at their schedule here. You know, well, they have had competition from, say, the Pacific and Abbotsford. Yes, it's not the best, but it's still way outside of their division. They've matched up against Syracuse. Those two, whenever they match up, is usually good head-to-head. Toronto's beat Milwaukee, for crying out loud. They've beat Manitoba. And I also have to think, with the Atlantic Division, at what point is this constant close? I've heard you guys talk about it as a car crash. At what point is that going to wear these teams out to the point they get to the postseason and they're just going to, I'm not going to say all of them, but it might happen enough that either, I don't think Utica has it. I think, honestly, if I'm going between Toronto and Syracuse in the postseason, I would almost give the edge to Syracuse because they have so much experience on that team. I'm just going to have to swipe left because I think one of Toronto or Syracuse will make it happen.
All right. Before I say anything, I'm going to swipe left because I don't want to make a decision because I don't know what to tell you. Okay. Toronto, I want to make it very clear. Toronto has faced a lot of other opponents. They spend a lot of time playing in the Central Atlantic and even Pacific. It takes some real guts to go all the way to Abbotsford from Toronto. You're going coast to coast to play these guys. I will say this. Abbotsford put up a great fight against Toronto, a team that I don't know, right? Like, it's all going to come down to goaltending for me, okay? When I look at the top three in the North, the Maple Leafs are made of glass, and goaltending's just going to go down. Wool's not going to play any playoff time. So who do you have in net for Toronto? You don't really have that reliable goaltender. If they have Wool, they'll go to the finals. If they don't, they don't, right? Utica has Nico Daws. He's been Daws, to say the least, right? And I mean, we look at Syracuse, they don't really need that goaltending because they're such a deep team, right? As for this pileup, you know, I don't know. I think that there's going to be so many burning bodies by the end of this that by the time the third round comes, it's just going to be a complete mess. All you're going to have left is Hershey, and I don't even know, right? So I'm going to swipe left because I think it's way, way too early to kind of do this. I don't know. They haven't played anybody really in the Atlantic. I think that's yet. They have dates coming up with Hershey. They haven't played Hershey yet. I don't think. Have they, Corey? No.
We have. No, not yet.
Not yet. Okay. They play Charlotte later, and I think they have a date with someone else, Wilkes-Barre. So I think, get me through those games and ask me again, because they didn't do so hot against Manitoba. They didn't do so hot against Abbotsford. And that's my take.
I feel like Zach just copied my homework.
Sorry.
But changed it up just enough to sneak it by.
Sorry.
Zach with the K, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
No, you don't have to apologize. It was just kind of funny because I'm sitting here going, so he's co-signing all these things. I like it.
Yeah.
So my plan came to fruition. I knew I was going to get two swipe lefts in this one take.
I just can't wait for the day where it's Toronto and Hershey in the third round and me and Corey kind of battle to the death for... Yeah. There's going to be some bloodshed. I'm calling it now. I'm sorry, Corey.
We need to do a live watch along with both of you two going at it the entire time. That'll be great. That'll be amazing.
Andrew, get ready with the Hurricanes air horn sound effects. Past PG-13 is just hurt almost the entire time. Or get Deanna to start doing the Narfs from Pinky and the Brain.
I have to practice. I'm about a good 20 years.
If I can hold it in during that game 6 live watch along, these guys got no excuse. And I was unhinged. So
If it does go Hershey Toronto this year, though, I will be inclined to possibly make that trip to Toronto for some of the away games. Is I haven't been there since I was very young, and I really want to see the Hockey Hall of Fame, and that sounds like a perfect excuse to do it. So, you know, if that happens, I wouldn't be upset.
I might have to join you guys. That sounds like a good time.
It's also Zach Power, though, too, so he has a little too much power. I don't know if he's got enough power to control himself when it comes to that series. So, I mean,
wow. His name is Power. What are you talking about? He doesn't have enough power.
He's the ultimate power.
Max power, baby. Max.
If they win and Zach burns himself somehow during that series, then it's all good with me, honestly.
Zach, have you? Please, can you tell me you figured out how to do the lighter, or is it still? Is this an issue for you still?
We're not doing this.
We are not going down this road. No. You
know what? I have no words, okay? I feel disrespected and shamed here.
And with that, we're going to move into Zach's hot take.
This is it. Like, I blocked the user from Tinder. This is it.
Blocked and reported.
Yeah, blocked and reported. He's a scam, okay? He's a scam, I tell you. I'm sorry, buddy. You can make a take. And I'll let you make the take first. How about that? All right.
Okay.
I'm going to keep it plain and simple. All right. I've been around for the John Scott era, right? I watched him play in the American Hockey League Live, and boy, is he just as much a stud down there as he is up in the NHL. But I'm going to say this, okay? I think that this whole situation needs to be reverted. And I look back, and I look to this year, Bo Horvat being traded to the Islanders. This kind of put a whole wrench in the monkey plan, okay? So I have a rule that I want to put in as commissioner that there will be no call-ups or call-downs before the AHL All-Star Game. I'm saying 2 weeks. And there's also to be no trade 2 weeks for that player. So if I'm Joseph Woll on the Toronto Marlies, I'm not going to be traded 2 weeks before the All-Star Game.
Interesting.
I would swipe right on that, honestly, because like you said, you bring up Horvat. Now that changes the whole dynamic of the Pacific Division and the NHL. And like you said, with how it is for the NHL Classic, there's a lot of guys who might not be able to go now because of, you know, being in different circumstances. So yeah, I agree. I mean, if we're coming to the actual outdoor, the AHL Classic, I think you have to no trades. I'm here for it. You know what, Zach? I see what you're doing here. I'm here for it. That's an easy swipe right for me.
Just
an easy swipe.
A simple right swipe for me. Next.
I would tend to swipe right on this one, but I think the window would have to be a little bit shorter. It would have to be it's the NHL, right? They're going to do what they're going to do. I mean, we just saw, you know, that trade between the Canucks and the Islanders here. You know, it stinks, definitely, but, you know, it's hockey. It's the business, unfortunately, side of things that, you know, I don't think you're going to be able to stop. I like the idea for it. I think it just probably has to be a shorter window, kind of like the roster freeze for around the holidays and stuff like that. So I tend to use that as my only caveat, but I agree with the concept of it for sure.
Would you say the week of, don't do it then?
Yeah, it would probably be, a week, maybe a week and a half type of thing, you know, right. A shorter window for sure.
Yeah. Not like 4 days before the actual thing.
Exactly. Yeah,
that was wild. I'm kind of following the same path as Corey. And, I find it a lot in my logic with the swipes is like I always have my like that's a great idea, and then here comes the other side of my brain. It's like, but this is hockey is a business at the end of the day. So I think if you shorten it down to a week, get some more of those pictures on the beach in your profile, like I'm going to be 100% on board. But I'll give it a right swipe anyway, just because it looks like you have an interesting personality.
Oh, I'm having flashbacks to the very first episode where you mentioned that you enjoy long walks on the beach in your intro. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. I just flashed back, like, ooh, all the way back 51 episodes ago. Now it's time for this week's special guest. Now, this week on the Holy Grail podcast, we are pleased to welcome from the Calgary Wranglers, Sandra Priscina. Now, Sandra is the play-by-play voice of the Calgary Wranglers, of course, and the first full-time female play-by-play announcer in the American Hockey League. She's, on top of all that, an accomplished Calgary-based broadcaster with a wide depth of experience as a journalist, host, and commentator. Chances are, if you have watched or listened to sports in Calgary, you have caught some of her work. She has been a fixture for 660 News and Sportsnet 960 The Fan, covering a wide variety of events. Most prominently, she's worked three different Olympics, the Women's World Cup, the Professional Women's Hockey Players Association, and has served as the voice of the CWHL's Calgary Inferno, and also worked many of the Stockton Heat's games during that season they spent in Calgary. Now this season, she is broadcasting wherever AHL TV is available during Calgary Wranglers games. Now she is joining us here on the Holy Grail podcast. Sandra, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
So first, let's focus on you. Now, what led you down the road to becoming a broadcaster, specifically in hockey?
Oh, wow. How much time you guys have?
As long as you need.
I'm just only child, so I grew up sort of gravitating towards sport because it gave me an outlet to be with other people and to learn how to be a good teammate and leadership skills. And that's all I really loved doing as a kid. I was never so much into like dolls or any other sort of stereotypical thing that you would think for a girl. It was always sports, and I grew up watching a lot of it with my dad, and obviously Hockey Night in Canada during those particular eras was really the cream of the crop. So on Saturday nights, we would sit down and we would listen to Bob Cole and hear what Don Cherry had to say. And that really instilled it in me. And I was very young in 1988, but that was really my first foray into international sport. That's when Calgary hosted the Winter Olympics. And even as a, you know, barely a toddler there, understanding the magnitude that sport had in this world and what it could do to bring people together. And it's incredible. So I'm a born and raised Calgarian, and it's so amazing to me that the legacy in this city still lives on from those particular Olympics. I'm still obviously broadcasting out of the Saddle Dome, but there's Canada Olympic Park, Olympic Plaza, where the medals were handed out. The Olympic Oval is at the University of Calgary, still the fastest ice in the world, and speed skaters still train there and compete there to this day. So that instilled me just the love of sport and the meaning that it had. And for me, just becoming a journalist and eventually covering sport was no brainer. Hockey, just being in a winter city, I think that's what I gravitated to the most. But and I want to be fair, because I have a lot of soccer background in me as well. My family is Croatian, so I'm very passionate about football. But hockey was always the number one. And I remember always going to the library and I would take out those. And I don't remember if you guys, I don't know if you guys remember them, but we don't have them anymore, but they'd be like these massive encyclopedia NHL record books. And I would take them out of the library and I would just flip through them and read everything. And some of the earliest biographies and autobiographies I remember reading, Wayne Gretzky, for me, Manon Raymond was one of my heroes growing up. And I remember when she released her autobiography, it was like sometime in the early to mid 90s. And it was just it for me. And that was a way that I could be myself and be my own person. And journalism just turned into that avenue where I could share my passion of sports. So I went to school at the University of Calgary here. I finished an English degree. And at that point, I remember my parents being like, listen, maybe journalism isn't the right avenue in terms of having a concrete career. And I think we can all speak to it. It's a difficult, broadcasting and journalism is a difficult career. So I went into potentially going into teaching, and started that and it was just not for me. And my family realized I was miserable and they're like, you need to do what you love. So eventually I finished a post degree in journalism. I got my foot in the door reading overnight news on radio and I've been in radio ever since. And then I've been able to do things on the side. So that's, and thank you for such a nice introduction. That's where I've been able to do the Olympics and the Women's World Cup and other passion projects. One of the greatest gifts I had was being the voice of the Calgary Inferno of the now defunct Canadian Women's Hockey League. But I was the voice that final season in 2019 when they hoisted the Clarkson Cup. And that was one of, doesn't matter men's or women's sports, that is one of the best teams that has ever been iced when, you know, you've got, I remember it was Rebecca Johnston, Blair Turnbull, who else was on that team? Breanne Jenner. Then we had three Americans come up. Casey Bellamy was up here. Brianna Decker was, like, the team was stacked. It was the best team I'd ever seen. They beat Marie-Philippe Poulin and Hillary Knight in the Clarkson Cup final. And it was just such a, and I still, even everything that I've covered to this point, that is the absolute highlight of my career. So that's kind of me in a nutshell. And it's just such a privilege and an honor to continue to be part of the hockey story here in Calgary and to do some work for the Wranglers.
So can you tell us a little bit about your day-to-day and balancing between being a broadcaster for the Wranglers on top of all the other duties that you do have going on in your life?
Sure. So Monday to Friday, I work at City News 660, and I'm the afternoon sports anchor there. So I cover two markets. I cover Calgary and I cover Vancouver. So I do updates for both of those cities, which is fascinating because the markets are so different. Vancouver, obviously, you know what's happened with the Canucks over the past, let's say, year. It's been a very interesting year. Calgary, things are a little bit more tame, although people are very passionate about their Flames and all of the hockey teams here. So that's basically my Monday to Friday gig. And then on top of that, so preparing for the Wranglers. So let's say this week we've got a back-to-back Thursday, Friday. You've got the Condors in town. So what I do during the week is I do all of my prep work. I do all of my stat sheets. And basically, I really like to work in advance and just prepare all of my notes. But as we know in the American Hockey League, you're at the whim of the big club because you've got call-ups, you've got injuries. So luckily this is, and I don't want to call it a slower week, but the Flames are on their bye week going into the All-Star game. So we already know that Walker Dewar, Jacob Pelche, Dennis Gilbert are back with the baby team. So that makes things a little bit easy. But for me, it's kind of like a balancing act where I go to radio, I focus on radio 100%. When I get home, I start working on my other duties. So getting ready for the Wranglers broadcasts, where if it's like my broadcast stat sheets, or if I'm big into cue cards. Like I have them by me. I use cue cards all the time for little notes that I want to share throughout the broadcast. So I work on those, put together special team sheets, things like that. So it is a bit of a balancing act, but at the same time, I love it. I love stats. I love learning the stories about these players. And I really like putting together the roster sheets, especially for obviously the opposition, because you learn things that you never knew. Like the Condors are a fascinating team where a lot of it built up through U Sports, which is the university program here in Canada, versus a lot of these teams building their rosters through NCAA. So that to me has been interesting and a facet to learn about how teams are built. So it is a balancing act, but so far, I mean, we're about to hit game four, I think 42 for the Wranglers tonight when they take the ice versus the Rain. So you learn a bit of a routine, and it'll be interesting, I think, once the playoffs, I mean, knock on wood, once the playoffs roll around here for the Wranglers and how that will work itself out.
I think you're touching all of our hearts here with your love of stats and everything. I know, at least I know you're touching mine. Let's go back, though, to October and your first game. Now, being from Calgary, what's going through your mind doing your first call in a building that has, you know, so much history, especially in hockey circles?
Sure. That's really it. I mean, we did some Stockton Heat games when the team was here during that pandemic shortened season. So it gave me a glimpse of what it was like. But if you think back to that really weird time, nobody's in the building, no fans. you're getting that weird noise piped in where it's sort of cheering, it's sort of booing, and it's not a true hockey atmosphere. It's just like something from the Twilight Zone. So I remember you're just kind of taking it in because the radio broadcast booth where we're set up for AHL TV is called the Peter Marr broadcast booth. And for your viewers who don't know, Peter Marr called essentially every single Calgary Flames game up to his retirement a couple of years ago. And this booth is named after him. And when I walked up the stairs and went over that scary catwalk and I looked and I couldn't believe that I would be broadcasting out of that booth that the legendary Peter Marr called hundreds of games from over his career. So that kind of hit me. And didn't know what to expect. Obviously, inaugural season. You sort of know how the roster looks just looking back on the seasons with the Heat. You knew Mitch Love, you knew Dustin Wolf and a lot of these big names, but how would they adapt to playing in an NHL building, an NHL market where you've got the Flames owners, the Flames coaching staff, and everybody around the team watching you on a nightly and or daily basis, dependent on when the games are. So that really hit me. And of course, Coachella, the opposition. So a team with no experience, you're going in, you don't know how they're going to play. By the way, they played incredibly well. That's what stood out for me. Cole Lind went on an absolute heater, no pun intended, versus the Wranglers in the Calgary Flames building. It was fascinating. Going back to my Calgary Inferno days, Jessica Campbell played for the Calgary Inferno. She now one of the assistant coaches with Coachella. So you have all of these storylines and they're just coming together. It's all culminating for you. So for me, being in that building where I'd watched Flames, Hitmen, going back to the days of when I was a child with my family, watching Icecapades and concerts and everything that I had been through in that building and knowing that I was calling a game there is still a little bit surreal to me, actually, looking back on it. And I don't know when I'll be able to fully appreciate it, maybe once the season is done, but it was pretty incredible.
It's almost like you're reading our mind here. You just brought up Jessica Campbell, and I'm kind of going to talk about her a little bit in our next question, but I just want to kind of talk about the AHL. You know, they are setting a lot of standards for inclusion in hockey, especially for women. I mean, just last season, we saw the first female officials in the league. Now, of course, you are in a play-by-play role, and then Jessica Campbell, the first female assistant coach in the American Hockey League, again, with the Coachella Valley Firebirds. And for those of you who might have missed that interview that we had with her, check out episode 40. But what does that mean to you to be in this company and in this league, possibly opening more doors for other women and girls?
Yeah, it's a privilege is probably the word that I would use to describe it. It's not something I take lightly, so I hope that I conduct myself in a mature but fun manner that people can learn from me. I mean, it means so much. I think back to Cassie Campbell, Leah Hextall. You see Jen Botterill night in and night out on the Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada panel, and those are the women who inspired me. So if I can inspire somebody even just a little bit and make it a little bit easier for the next woman who wants to do this role and I hope we get to a point where it's not a story. It's just a broadcaster doing his or her job. And I guess that's kind of what hits me because going into it, I knew that there would be a little bit of pushback. But I don't mean that by the league or by the Calgary Wranglers, but people in Calgary are used to my voice. They might not like it, but they're used to it because I've been on the radio for so long. So they're like, okay, she's doing Wranglers, whatever, fine. But a lot of the other markets, I did read some of the comments and some of the vitriol, you know, pegged towards me, and I get it. I knew it, and this is a job that I chose, and I knew it would be an issue going forward. It's come to a point where, you know, it's a mental hurdle that you have to get over, but I can't change the way that people feel about women in sport. I just can't do it. All I can do is give 100% and study these players and tell their stories and do the best work that I can do. And I know it's not going to be perfect. And if I make a mistake, my mistake is !!! because it's a woman and, well, she doesn't know what she's talking about, or I need to go back to the kitchen, or I'm shrill, or whatever nonsense I've heard over the past 4 or 5 months. And that's just a reality of the job. For me, it's not about that. That's outside noise. I'm answering to my bosses. I'm answering to the Wranglers organization and to other broadcasters who can give me constructive feedback. Everything else is outside noise. So I just want to give you the best product. I want people to feed off of my energy. This is an incredible team. I mean, look at what they've achieved in their first season here with the Wranglers, and they're not done. So to me, I've just got to stick to what I know. And hopefully if I can take it on the teeth, maybe it makes it a little bit easier for somebody else deciding, okay, I want to give this a try.
Yeah, I think you left a lot of good advice for those of us who already work in the field in whatever capacity, you know, whether it's writing or socials or even up on to broadcasting and things like that. You've had a lot of good advice, and I know I'll be going back and writing some of this down to remind myself in those hard moments.
Yeah, and that's all you can do. And you need to surround yourself, I think, Deanna, with good people. And that's the most important thing. And we're constantly in an industry where we get feedback, but you have to choose the feedback that you listen to. So, yes, you want to hear fan feedback, but you don't want to take it as constructive as your colleagues. So a couple of broadcasts, I brought Peter Labardius as a color commentator with me, and he's a renowned sports journalist here in Canada. And just to hear what he had to say, or some of my other mentors, you know, Rob Kerr, I've reached out to Chris Cuthbert, Leah Hextall has reached out to me even. The Flames organization has offered me a mental health coach if I ever needed it. So it's about surrounding yourself and enveloping yourself with people who will help you not only get better, but also boost you up when you need it.
No, that's really awesome. The fact that they actually go out of their way and do that and, you know, make you feel like that you're part of the whole organization from top to bottom. So that's really awesome. And earlier you mentioned about how great the Wranglers have been. So let's, I guess, time to transition us to talking about the Wranglers. As of the time we were recording, Calgary is third in the AHL, only 1 point back of the league-leading Hershey Bears. The team is also on a 7-2-1-0 streak in their last 10. What is working for the squad right now in Calgary?
We hear it a lot in sport. It is the next man up mentality. But listen, this is exactly what's been happening with this team. And it took them a while to figure it out, I think. October was a bit of a write-off because you're going, and I talked about it earlier, you're going into a new AHL market. So not a new hockey market, but a new AHL market with all eyes on you. And I remember that first game versus Coachella, and you've got a box and it's Daryl Sutter and it's the Calgary Flames ownership. So not only just the general manager, Brad Treliving, and then your own general manager and Brad Pascal and everybody like that, but the people that pay your checks are there and they're watching you. So I can only imagine what's going through the mind of Dustin Wolf or even a Matthew Phillips who's playing at home. So that first month was a write-off because the team was learning to really figure itself out. And then November rolls around. And in that month, only 2 regulation losses, 1 overtime loss. Other than that, all wins. And the team started to really gel. Dustin Wolf starting to get more comfortable. But then at the same time, you've got the call-ups happening from the Flames. So first it was the blue liners. You've got Dennis Gilbert going up and then Matthew Phillips going up for a call up. And then more recently, Walker Duehr, Jacob Pelche, Radim Sohorna has seen some time up with the team. But what Mitch Love has been able to do is he's been able to roll 4 lines consistently. And again, we're going back to time on ice. I don't know it, so I'm just going by my eye test, obviously, because the AHL isn't tracking it. But you're seeing very even shift lengths, line lengths going out for the duration. The blue line has just adapted really nicely. A couple of rookies back there, Jeremy Poirier, Yan Kuznetsov, completely different players. I realize they played on the same junior team, but polar opposites, where you've got one that loves to quarterback the power play, another one stay-at-home defenseman, but they fit in so seamlessly. And Dustin Wolfe feels comfortable. He's not having any sort of sophomore slump. And to me, all of this is being held together by the glue that is Mitch Love and Brett Sutter. You've got a guy that comes in here, celebrates his 1,000th American Hockey League game. He's seen everything. Obviously, you know how many years he spent with the Checkers, so much time with the Ontario Reign. He just knows how to make this team click. Whether he's the second line center, the third line center, he's out there killing penalties, he's blocking shots. He's just leading by example. And this is what stood out to me. And I wrote a little bit about this for the Wranglers website. Kevin Rooney, after that 1,000th AHL game, both Brett and Kevin that game scored shorthanded goals. Brett's ended up being the game winner, like such a storybook ending when he got his silver stick that game. And Kevin Rooney saying they'd only played for like four games together and said, I feel like I've known him my entire life. And that's just the Brett Sutter effect. And we're seeing it right now where incredible leadership, and that's just bleeding through the rest of this team.
Yeah, and that's so amazing. Like for guys like him who've played 1,000 AHL games, you would think like a lot of guys want to go play in the NHL and stuff like that. But having that longevity in the American Hockey League, it just shows that, like, okay, I'm in the A, but I'm still getting to play hockey. And that's really cool to see. Like, you see guys get that far into their careers that they get 1,000 games.
Well, it blows my mind. Sorry, just to interrupt you for a second, Andrew, there. It blows my mind because you think he probably could have gone to Europe. He probably could have gone to Europe. Things would have been easy. But just think how many bus rides he's taken, how many minutes he spent on a commercial airplane. And it's all about, yes, he's part of the Sutter family, but just think of the hard work his wife has to put in and raising three kids, maybe without her husband all of the time. It really does take a village, and he is just the epitome of that.
I was going to say, you expect anything different from Daryl's son, a good born, bred, and raised Alberta boy? I mean, this is kind of exactly what I expected from the beginning.
Yep, exactly. And I remember, I mean, I was still in school when he got drafted by the Flames, and his journey is not the most traditional, right? He did see a cup of coffee in the NHL, but he was able to just really establish himself as a good pro. And I know we trot that phrase and that wordage out from time to time, but he truly is a good pro.
Yeah. It's another thing too. Like, I like how the fact that, like, when talking to people around the league, like with like you and others around it, it's like, it's nice to see that people see the AHL as a league, not just it's just a throwaway league. It's just guys who are not good enough for an AHL. It's nice to see that, like, okay, this is a legitimate league. People actually, mm-hmm. you know, put the work in and stuff like that. So it's good to see that there's a transition or a different mindset of how to view this league.
Yes.
Than just, oh, it's the AHL. And then it's like, no, it's a legit league that actually produces great hockey players.
And so great hockey players that may end up playing their entire careers there. You look at somebody like Rocco Grimaldi, who maybe could be playing in the NHL, but in a bottom six role or a bottom three role that he doesn't get any minutes. But here he is in a top six, top three role, and he's putting up great numbers. Like, there are places for these players, and the AHL is not only a development league. Yes, it is a development league, but you said it, it's a professional league, and these players are putting in the rigors, practice. This isn't beer league hockey. You know what I mean? Like, these players aren't practicing at 5 o'clock in the morning or 10 o'clock at night and playing these games. It's a true professional league, you know, 70 plus game season, the Calder Cup. If you win it, it's a massive accomplishment. So it should be revered.
Absolutely. I'm gonna segue a little bit here. Not only do the Wranglers share a city with their parent club in Calgary and the Flames, but they also share an arena. And we kind of talked about this a little bit before, but kind of what's been the fan reception and feedback been about this whole new arrangement, sharing the arena and everything?
Yeah, I had read a story that now old as it may be, the Saddle Dome is apparently the second busiest arena in North America right now. So just to put it in perspective, you've got the Flames, Wranglers, Calgary Hitmen, as well as the Calgary Roughnecks, the National Lacrosse League team playing as professional and or junior teams in that building. At the same time, you're still holding other events, whether it be concerts and stuff. So the building is busy. The Wranglers, though, have really started carving out, I think, a niche fan base for weekday games. Weekend games are great. I mean, I remember it was the set against the Condors in January. It was a Sunday game, 1 p.m. puck drop. It was the first time they actually opened the 200 bowl for a Wranglers game because so many people came down. So you're getting close to 9,000 people. So that was probably the pivotal, you know, the marquee game so far this season. Midweek games right now are really niche in the sense that you're getting, okay, somebody's a fan of the Vancouver Canucks. I'm seeing a lot of Vancouver fans at an Abbotsford game. I think this week we've got Thursday, Friday, we've got Bakersfield. I'm sure I'm going to see a lot of Edmonton Oilers fans in the stands. What, though, I really like about the midweek game is, like, you see these diehard AHL fans. The other day, I saw a couple of Stockton Heat jerseys, but I also saw a St. John Flames jersey with Steve Bajen on the back. It was not Steve Bajen. I thought it might have been him, you know, but this is like, we're kicking it old school, 2001 Calder Cup. So I thought that was, so you see these just fans of hockey, and who knows how long that person has had that jersey waiting in their closet thinking, okay, there's going to be one day where I can wear this baby. And I just thought that was fascinating. So the market is getting it, and Calgary is a smart hockey city. So with the Wranglers being successful, fans are, the interest is peaked, and we're seeing greater attendance. And I think as the season goes on and we get into that playoff picture, you know, again, knock on wood, who knows what can happen as we get into this second half, but with the team playing so well, I think we will see more and more people. And if there is a playoff game here, I think it will be very well attended.
And I thought seeing a San Jose Barracuda jersey against Laval in Cleveland on Saturday night was a little head turning, but wow. Yeah. All right.
We have a co-host who's not here tonight, who's a newfie born and bred, and Zach Power. I know he would be eating up that St. John's Flames jersey.
Yeah. That might have been him.
That's what Zach gets for missing this episode.
Exactly. Well, this episode is going to be airing just a few days ahead of the All-Star Classic in Laval. And, of course, representing Calgary are names that we've already brought up in Matthew Phillips, Dustin Wolf, and, of course, Coach Mitch Love. Now, this is Phillips and Wolf's first trip to the All-Star Classic. You already talked a bit about what their body of work on the ice is, but can you give us a little bit of a glimpse of these three off the ice and kind of behind the scenes?
Well, Mitch Love is a very, I wasn't sure what to expect with him because you're coming off of that weird season, still a pandemic season last year. You're in Stockton, you go on a bit of a run, rookie coach, rookie goaltender. You wonder if that's going to translate into the next season. And for Mitch Love, the way he's adapted and what we talked about it earlier with that next man up mentality and talking to people who played with Mitch, they're not surprised that he went into coaching because he has a true coaching mind. And I never see him losing his cool on the bench. He's just very collected. And if he needs to talk to the officials, he calls them over calmly. His post-game comments are always very cerebral and he's honest and he speaks that way. So for Mitch Love, I think what you see is what you get both on and off the ice. Dustin Wolf is fascinating to me because his story, I think, is I don't want to call it like a Rudy or an underdog or anything like that, but, you know, I mean, had a great junior career, but physically people are thinking, well, can this guy play professional hockey? I mean, he's small, he's 6 foot tall, but I think that's being a little bit generous at times, and he's not that heavy. But then you see him play and you see him play, and he is all business all the time. So I normally get to the Saddle Dome about 90 minutes before puck drop, and I, you know, get things ready in the booth and get my stuff set up. And the way that I'm set up is I'm set up right over the penalty boxes, so that means I'm facing the benches, right? And a lot of times Dustin Wolf actually beats me there, and he's sitting on that bench, and he's got either his headphones in and he's got his little cup of Gatorade or Powerade, or I don't know what the sponsor is, but he's just there and his eyes are just focused on the ice, and he never looks at the jumbo. One time he looked at the Jumbotron, and that's when Canada and US were playing in the World Juniors, but that was it. That's an anomaly, right? But other than that, he is focused, and you can see him visualizing, and his career is going to be so interesting to follow, to see if he can indeed take that next step to the NHL. Will he go down the road of a UC Saros, who maybe isn't the biggest guy, but is just so smart technically that he translates it to the big league? So that to me is really intriguing, but you can tell he's all business. And I often wonder, it'll be the closer of a back-to-back, and I'll go by Brian, who does the digital work for the Calgary Wranglers, as I'm making my way to the bench or to my spot on the other broadcast booth. And I won't see Dustin on the bench, and I'll say to Brian, okay, we're going to see Oscar tonight. Nope. Dustin is making a back-to-back start, and that's just Dustin. He wants to see the puck. He wants to see it all the time. He wants to play hard minutes. And I remember that first game versus Coachella, and they're introducing the players, right, one by one to the fans. They go through the tunnel, all the pyrotechnics, all that stuff. And I thought to myself as they were introducing the players, who will get the loudest cheers? It was Dustin Wolf. So he is already a fan favorite. He's got songs. I'm a Duran Duran fan, so he's already got his Duran Duran song. He's got his howl. He's got, you know, clap for the Wolfman. I mean, he's got a fan base. They love him here. Matthew Phillips, Calgary kid. You can tell he's embracing playing in this city, playing in front of his family and friends on a daily basis. He loves it. And when he scores a goal, he almost feels like honored to do it because he's in the Saddle Dome. And I don't know what his future is going to hold, obviously, with this organization. He's an unrestricted free agent at the end of this particular contract and the end of this campaign. So I would love for him to continue the journey with the Flames organization. I don't know, but I will say this has been an awesome season for him, and he'll be able to look back on it. Who knows? I mean, maybe they go on a Calder Cup run. I don't know. But for him to say, okay, I played pro in my home city and I scored a lot of goals and put up a lot of points and I represented my home city at an all-star game, I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. It's funny when you mentioned that, like, Dustin Wolf's like 6 foot, like UC Saros, you know, that style of play. It makes me always like think about guys who are like, a lot of people would not see them as conventional hockey players for their size. I always think of like Nathan Gerby.
Sure.
You know, Deanna would know. It's like, it's always interesting to see the guys who people don't think as like you said, 6'2", 6'3", and stuff like that. But it's always fascinating watching those guys adapt their size to the game and still be able to do their job. So
yeah,
that's really cool to see something like that, just for being able to make that work for them.
It's interesting. So I've been calling them the Czech Towers here in Calgary. We've obviously got Radim Zahorna and Adam Klapka, who they're both 6'7". Some websites listing Klapka at 6'8", and certainly could be. He's playing in his first pro season here in North America. You can see he's still kind of trying to figure things out, should he be fighting this? But man, just the wingspan on some of these players. Another one was when Vincent Desharnais was here with the Condors. I'd never seen him in person. And although the Condors' performance kind of left something to be desired, he was the standout. And then a week later, he gets a call up to the Oilers. So yeah, you're right. You've got these players who are either both sides of the spectrum, right? You've got someone that's really small, someone that's really big, but they've really forged a role for themselves. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So going back to the All-Star break real quick. So we are sliding into the All-Star break. We're going to ask you to put your teacher hat on. What grade would you give this Calgary squad and why?
Oh, boy. Well, I don't want to sound like a homer, right? But I mean, the numbers don't lie. I have to give this team, let's just say, to be fair, give this team an A-. And the only reason I would even give this team an A- is looking back on October and the record probably wasn't great. But then you just see how this team developed right now, just as we're recording this and going into this, top three power play, top three penalty kill, fewest goals against, most wins, potentially the first team to 30 wins in the AHL, all in your first year in a new city. I mean, how can that not be one of the stories of the American Hockey League season? And to be fair, I'll be honest with you, other than the Pacific Division and maybe a team or two out of the Central, that's where most of my focus goes. So I don't know a whole lot about what's happening with the rest of the league. I know you have the perennial teams that always do well, but I think the Wranglers hold a candle to all of them right now. So yeah, why don't we say A-?
Well, if it makes you feel any better, John Peterson, the voice of the Texas Stars, was on the show last week. He also gave his team an A- as well. So it seems like you guys have a very similar grading style there, mm-hmm. for sure.
And listen, like I'm always here to call a spade a spade. I'm an honest broadcaster. I feel that I am, but I cannot find something that I don't like about this team, because they don't ride the highs too high and they don't ride the lows too low. They're just so even keel. They'll start trailing in a game, claw their way back. I mean, I would be nitpicking if, okay, there was a game versus the Ontario Reigns, so the last game that I called, where they had the lead, they squandered the lead and ended up losing in overtime. That's just me nitpicking. Okay, they shouldn't have given up the lead with a couple of minutes left. But how many times have they done that this season? It's not like it's a habit. It's more of an anomaly than something that's consistent. But what has been consistent is this team is consistently good.
And that's been going back to last year. I mean, if you couldn't tell over here on that side, you know, I'm covering the Chicago Wolves last year. That Western Conference final between Stockton and Chicago was some of the most fun and the best hockey I've seen while I've been on the beat. And to see this team move from Stockton all the way up to Calgary and to really not miss a beat. I mean, they're just really well coached. And if I'm ever up late at night, I like to try and catch a couple of those games whenever I can. It's just, it's to me, it's a lot of fun. And I love what they're doing over there. And well, because right now it doesn't really look like Chicago's going to have a horse in this playoff race. I might have to jump on someone else's bandwagon, but
you're welcome. You're welcome here. Yeah, come on guys.
I might take you up on that, to Please. Be quite honest.
Yeah. Zach's team's going to be making the playoffs, so he's stuck on his own island. But we'll be down here. But finally,
put the horse before the cart.
But finally, we always got to ask our guests to imagine that, you know, you're out there on ice in the AHL and you bury a big one, and you get to choose your own goal song. So what song would you pick to come blaring from those speakers up there in Calgary?
Okay, so let's do this. Let's say I'm a center, and I split the D, and I roof it top shelf. The song that I want to hear is Pleasure Principle by Janet Jackson.
That's a good pick.
I like it. So I love it.
That's my jam. I mean, when I hosted some stuff on the radio sports station here, that would be my song going in. So I think I was thinking, okay, am I going to pick like Phil Collins or something, you know, with the drum? No. Janet Jackson all the way. That's my jam.
Amazing pick. I think that's one of my tops out of everybody that we've asked so far. I think you're in my top two.
All right.
I love it.
I'm giving you a high five right there.
High five. There we go. Nailed it. All right. Well, Sandra, thank you once again for taking time out of your extremely busy schedule to come visit us here at the Holy Grail. And best of luck to you and the Wranglers for the rest of this season.
Well, it was my pleasure. Really nice catching up with you guys. And please have me on anytime. Reach out.
Absolutely. We will.
I'd love to have you again.
All right. It's been a few weeks, but we are now going to take a look and revisit our Wheel of Fate teams. For those of you who may be new, the Wheel of Fate is our version of fantasy hockey, AHL, and the Holy Grail with, you know, just our unique spin on it. So, guys, we remember how Zach was leading for a bit, even with Jonathan Berggren on his team. Corey has retaken the lead. Surprise, surprise. But yeah, Corey's out front with 750.5 points. Andrew went on a little bit of a run here. Now in second with 723.25. I'm flat in the middle of the pack here in third place with 685.5, largely thanks to Atu Makaniemi's two shutouts and TJ Tynan just absolutely, I mean, he is reigning supreme when it comes to those assists right now. Just fantastic. Thank you, TJ. Zach is in fourth place, very, very close behind me, like, 3/4 of a point behind me at 684.25, and Jeremy bringing up the rear at 628.5.
Remember when Jeremy had all those respins and now here he is?
Yeah, because if you remember back to when we first set up the roles, he actually did all his forwards first and then his defensemen. And so I think he was a little bit cornered in when it came down to it. And here we are today.
All right. So the question is, of course, Zach Martin isn't part of this. He's just along for the ride right now. But the other three of you, Zach with a K, Corey, Andrew, how are you guys feeling about your teams? Did anybody want to do a reroll tonight?
We talk about Berggren for a minute, okay? I've been crying myself to sleep.
You have 60 seconds. Go.
Okay, I'll be very quick. I thought he was going to be sent down. There was only a rumor, and then here we are. I'm going to re-roll on him.
You are. You're officially giving up Johnny Burgers, eh?
I don't want to.
Okay.
I have to.
I'll take
it. All right, Zach, are you ready for me to spin the wheel? Is there any team that you are wanting or not wanting at this point?
I don't want anybody in the bottom 12, please.
Okay.
I don't want anybody in the bottom 12.
All right, here we go.
Don't get San Diego.
Diego.
Syracuse
oh.
Crunch.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Well, the good news is I think you can take your pick here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no one. We have no one on Syracuse.
For a forward.
Bear Boulay, I believe, is a forward.
Yeah.
He's only top five in scoring.
Yeah, that might be the guy.
Syracuse has a ton of high-point scorers in all zones.
Right? Like, is Radish going to be called up anytime soon?
Well, Radish is a defender.
Yeah.
Oh, there we go. I misread that. Perfect. Let's go with Boulay.
All right. Zach switching out. Podcast favorite, Jonathan Berggren with Alex Baraboulay from Syracuse. Currently 12 goals, 36 assists, a plus 17, 46 penalty minutes, 3 power play goals. Zero shorthanded goals, but a whopping 125 shots. So that's going to move him up quite.
Zach has to lose at least 5 points for dabbing in the year 2023, right?
No, well, no, the thing was
he dabbed.
That's 5 more points.
That's 15 per infraction, Zach. That's going in. And now we're going to head into our bonus round. We have a twofer this week. Corey and I actually tied in last week's bonus round. And we decided, you know, my beats the Cleveland, well, formerly Lake Erie Monsters. Corey is the Hershey Bears. What connects the two teams? The 2016 Calder Cup Championship. Well, so, yeah, we decided we're going to ask a few questions around that. And
I believe Corey has the first question.
Yeah, so we're taking two with Hershey and two with Cleveland. They're, you know, more oriented with those teams. But mine starts in the semifinals of that season. Hershey, Wilkes-Barre, you know the matchup. You love the matchup. The Bears and the Penguins went seven games and then some. Game seven went into overtime. Do you remember who scored that winning goal for the Bears?
Is it Chris Bourque? It's always Chris Bourque, isn't it?
Not Chris Bourque this time. It's current NHL forward.
Is it with the Washington Capitals?
Not currently, no. He did play for the Capitals, but not right now. He plays for a certain team that, you know, may be growing their hair out a little bit longer, if you know what I mean.
So I guess Orlov's on the question.
You know, some you know, might say it's
okay.
Actually, both of the guys involved in the goal play for that team currently, actually.
I know the team in question, but their roster is just like
blanking.
So gross. I can't even think of the player.
Shot in the dark just for the fun of it because of the crazy eyes, Brandon Tenev.
No, that's not quite it. Are we tapping out here officially?
I'm tapping out. I think I know what it is, but I'm tapping out.
Travis Boyd is the answer to this question.
Oh, gosh.
Current Arizona Coyotes forward, Travis Boyd.
Mm-hmm.
And his assisting on the goal was another current Coyote, Liam O'Brien, as well.
I thought you were talking about the Islanders.
Now the reference was the mullet arena with the
hair. Yeah, as soon as he scratched the back of his neck, I was like, oh.
That was a beautiful reference. Just saying.
Why do I think of Seattle grunge? I guess.
Oh, yeah. I like it. So the Lake Erie Monsters, RIP, best name ever, had six out of the top 10 skaters based on points in the race to the 2016 Calder Cup Championship, just in the playoffs, mind you. I'm going to give you four players. Which of these players were not in that list? Now, there's no trick to this. All these guys were on that postseason team. So, was it Oliver Bjorkstrand, Lucas Sedlak, TJ Tynan, or Ryan Craig? Which one was not in the top 10 in points in the postseason?
Ryan Craig.
That's what I was going to say. I'm going to say Sedlak then.
You guys bounced all around it. It was TJ Tynan.
What?
That was my first thought.
He didn't score points? When?
Wow. Oliver Bjorkstrand finished third with 16. Lucas Sedlak, also 16 points. Zach Werenski, 14. Ryan Craig, 13. Josh Anderson, 12. Daniel Zaar, 12. Not appearing in the top 10. TJ Tynan.
Was he hurt?
No. He was at least not in the final game.
How many points did he have?
Not enough.
If you give me a second, I can look. So I'll get back to that. So we are 0 for everything. While I look that up, Corey can go on to his third question.
All right. I'll give you guys another interesting goal scorer question. Who had the series clinching goal in Hershey's 5-game win over the Toronto Marlies in the 5th and decisive game? Now, if you guys know me a little bit, maybe leading you a little bit, it was not Chris Bourque. It's somebody else that I'm pretty fond of.
Oh, does he like a little shrimp on his Barbie?
He might.
I'm going to go with Nathan Walker then.
That's exactly who it was. I was eager to award a point on this one. Nathan Walker had it. He had two goals that entire playoff year, and it happened to be Hershey had a 4-1 lead. Maybe it was 4-0 at one point in game five, and it was cut down to 4-3, and Walker had the fourth goal that stood up as the game winner.
Okay, so to answer your question, in the 2016 Calder Cup playoffs in 17 games, TJ Tynan only had 6 points and was a -8. So moving on to my third question here. Third question, gosh, my second question, but it's fourth overall. So while it was the first time the Lake Erie Monsters organization won the Calder Cup, it wasn't the first time Cleveland as a city welcomed home the cup. Closest guest wins. How many times has the Calder Cup been won by a team representing Cleveland?
Three.
Well, I know it's at least two. He said three, Zach said four, so I guess I'm going to go five.
Okay. Andrew is the closest. It was the 10th time the Calder Cup was won by a team representing Cleveland, as the Barons won nine titles in between, well, during their history, 1937 to 1973. So Andrew's the winner on this one. We did have a tiebreaker real quick. I want to see if anyone knows it. How many seconds left were in, or how many seconds were left in overtime when Oliver Bjorkstrand won the Calder Cup for Cleveland?
17.
10 seconds.
Two.
Ooh.
Ooh.
So there you go. And just as, yeah, that is where the pain started. That is where I lost my voice cheering in the front row, right behind the goal. Gosh.
I forgot about the Barons were. I forgot the Barons were an AHL team. I was thinking of the NHL team.
Well, just a quick reminder, we do have a couple games of the week.
Yeah, there's two free events to talk about this weekend. You get some free hockey on Saturday. Springfield Thunderbirds host the Bridgeport Islanders. That's a matchup of two teams that are tied in points as we're talking right now. That should be a fantastic matchup. And then the AHL All-Star festivities. Sunday night is the skills competition at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And Monday at 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time is the actual game itself, and it's free to watch on AHL TV.
And that is going to be it for the Holy Grail this week. If you'd like to see or hear more of us, please subscribe to us on YouTube or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Of course, follow us on Twitter at the Holy Grail, G-R-A-H-L. On the Field Pass Hockey website and the Field Pass Hockey app, you can find all of our other podcasts. Please give them a listen. But until next week, on behalf of all of us here at the Holy Grail, we hope you have an amazing week. Enjoy that All-Star game, and we'll see you next week. Bye.
This has been the Holy Grail Podcast. Have a question or topic suggestion? Hit us up on Twitter or drop us an email. For the latest news across the American Hockey League and the rest of minor league hockey, download the Field Pass Hockey app, now available in the Apple and Android app stores.